Hard Feelings by Mark Coggins is a bang bang thrill ride, says best-selling author Seth Harwood, who adds that the lead character of Winnie is a female Jack Reacher. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 3. Reardon. I slid off the bench and stood at the end, taking in the attractive woman who materialized out of nowhere to save me from wearing a 360-pound bow tie. "A spotter," I said. "What do you mean? I had it under control."
"Sure you did. You had it under control the way the French had the Blitzkrieg under control."
I grinned and nodded, suddenly very self-conscious that I was shirtless. "You live around here?"
"I save you from bench press suicide, and now you're trying to chat me up. You don't recognize me, do you?"
I squinted at her through the glare of the floodlight. She wore a dark tracksuit over a body that managed to be curvy and muscular at the same time. If you told me she was an elite-level sprinter, or even a competitor in a field event like discus, I would have believed you. Her skin was pale, with peach undertones, her eyes a startling green. Her jet black hair didn't seem to go with her complexion, so I put it down for a dye job. I snapped my fingers like I'd figured it out. "Of course. You're my third ex-wife."
"There's no way you convince three women to marry you. Here's a hint. Think Napa Valley."
I thought about Napa Valley, and I thought about all the bad associations the place had for me. Then the dime dropped. Her hair used to be longer and strawberry-colored, and she had bulked up considerably, but it was the same woman. She had been a human guinea pig for a device to help people with spinal cord injuries walk again, but some bad guys had tried to steal the technology from the startup where it was being developed. The final showdown cost me a 2-month stay in the hospital and 2 life sentences for the bad guys. "Jesus," I said. "Last I heard, you got married to your venture capitalist friend and were living happily ever after. What are you doing here?" She took hold of one of the 100-pound plates on the barbell and spun it idly.
"Did you read about our company going public?"
"No, but I don't follow that kind of stuff."
"How about how our technology was improving the lives of thousands of spinal cord patients?"
"No, I didn't. To tell you the truth, that whole episode was like a bad dream to me. There were times I couldn't believe it really happened. That a technology could do what it does for you. I didn't go looking for further developments."
"If you had, you wouldn't have found them. The company never got off the ground. We were never able to replicate the success I had with the prototype device."
She gave the plate on the barbell a final violent spin.
"And then the winemaker broke out of prison."
"He couldn't have got very far."
"Think again. He got clean away, and now he's out for revenge."
I walked over to the table where I'd laid out a 6 shots of whiskey and picked one up. I offered it to her, but she waved me off, so I tilted my head back and threw it down the hatch. I snagged my shirt from the carport floor, pulled it on, then turned to face her. "Who'd he get? That geeky mad scientist guy who invented the technology? What's his name? Niebauer?"
"Dead."
I hesitated. "Valmont? I mean Ted, your husband?"
"Dead."
"Jesus, I'm..." She waved me off again, seemingly no more affected than when she passed on the whiskey.
"Keep the party going. Who else?"
"His brother?"
"Dead."
"There's no one else but you and me."
"He also killed Breen, his old partner, who was imprisoned in another state. I took a moment to absorb all of this. Why hasn't he come after us? They've sent 5 teams after me so far. I think they want to take me alive, but I've never been able to confirm it. None of them live long enough for me to question them. On the other hand, I think he just hasn't found you yet, or possibly he's saving you for something special. Special? I only met the man once. But oh, what a meeting. You put a knife through the throat of his employee, and then shot and beat him senseless with a phone book. It tends to make an impression. I suppose it does. I gunned the final whiskey shot, not bothering to offer it to her. I remembered now that she couldn't drink. Alcohol scrambled the signals from the device to her central nervous system. You're here to warn me, then. I appreciate it, but you didn't have to come personally. A phone call or a letter would have sufficed. That's vintage. I could never tell whether you were stupid or just saw an advantage to acting that way. No, I'm not here to warn you. I'm here to get your help. If we don't hang together, we'll hang separately. A saying from one of your founding fathers. I nodded, remembering that she was British, although there was nothing left of her accent. Yeah, Ben Franklin. Where'd you park?
Where'd I park?
If you parked in the carport by the front gate, you're gonna get towed. May already be towed. That's for residents only. Mrs. Crenshaw watches those spots with an eagle eye and calls a wrecker whenever she sees a car she doesn't recognize.
That's where I parked.
Give me your keys. The trailer's open. Wait in there and we'll concoct our plan for world domination when I come back. She looked at me like I was trying to pull a fast one. I'm not going to steal your car. You'll never find the visitor lot. It's way in the back and it's not even lit.
Okay,
she said, and pulled a set of rental car keys from the pocket of her warm-up.
It's a black Lincoln.
Pretty cushy for you. She passed over the keys and I started toward the front gate. Hey, I said, turning back to her. What do you call yourself these days? She had a phony name when I had met her, and I'd never learned her real one. She smiled for the first time, and pronounced dimples appeared in her cheeks. I remembered those too.
Winnie, she said.
Winnie? As in Winnie the Pooh?
No, not as in Winnie the fucking anything. Just Winnie.
It was my turn to grin. Winnie, how sweet. I found the Lincoln at the front of the complex, as advertised. I glanced over at Mrs. Grenshaw's trailer and saw her face pasted to the glass of her kitchen window, hand cupped against the glare. I was half convinced that she received kickbacks from the towing company, and the nasty look she gave me as I opened the door of the Lincoln did nothing to change my mind. I started the car and pointed it toward the back of the trailer park, mulling over Winnie's story as I navigated the labyrinth of streets. I decided it was mostly bullshit. I didn't doubt that her company had failed, but the business about the winemaker's escape from prison and his subsequent efforts to get revenge was hard to believe. Maybe her husband had left her. Maybe he had actually died. The story had to be a diluted coping mechanism. That a person in her position could come and hinge didn't surprise me. She was like the operator of a construction crane. She sat atop an elaborate machine, controlling it without any direct connection to or feedback from the mechanism. She was estranged and isolated from the physical world in ways I could never understand. I parked the Lincoln next to a white van in the visitor's lot. 3/4 of the park residents had left to spend the summer away from the 110-degree heat, so I was mildly surprised to find even one other car there. I trudged back to my humble abode. A block from my place, I cut through the yard of a neighbor I knew was in Minnesota and came out across the street from my trailer. 2 guys were standing in front.
One was pulling up the cover from my vintage 1968 Galaxy 500 to look at the license plate, and the other was watching him do it. My pulse jumped up a notch. Maybe Winnie was onto something after all. The interlopers heard the crunch of gravel from my footsteps and turned to look at me.
"Hello," said the one who wasn't monkeying with the cover,
a lurch-like giant whose bald head gleamed dully. "Hi there," I said. "You a friend of August's?"
"Yes, we are. We didn't get an answer when we knocked, and we wanted to make sure this was his place. Have you seen him around?"
"I saw him earlier in the day. We had a date to work out together." I gestured at my attire and then at the bench press, where I noticed something puzzling. "But I'm a little late." The guy by the car let go of the cover and straightened up. He was short and sleek and wearing too many clothes for the desert. "Is Winnie visiting him?" he asked. "Winnie?" I said in what I hoped was a puzzled tone. "His old girlfriend." I started across the street. "He never mentioned her. How do you guys know him? Fraternity brothers?" A pause. "That's right." I came to stop in front of them, standing slightly closer to the larger one. I had moved the Lincoln key to my left hand, positioning the notchless shank between the fingers of my closed fist like a tiny dagger. I smiled. "So the frat publishes the license plates of its members, does it?" Lurch started to smile back, but realized halfway through that I was calling their bluff. Whatever expression he would have assumed next was lost when I hit him in the mouth. I felt the key lacerate his cheek and he fell against the trailer, reaching instinctively to staunch the blood that was already spurting from the wound. I turned to face the short guy just as he fumbled a police taser from the pocket of his windbreaker. He jerked his arm up, the laser sight glowed red, and there was a pop like a light bulb exploding. One of the two taser probes bit into my thigh. The other spooled past me, the copper wire that ran from it to the gun shimmering with reflected light. I heard the rapid-fire crackle of voltage being sent down the wires, but with the second probe lying on the cement behind me, very little juice was being conducted across the gap. I rushed the short man, threading my way past his outstretched arm to bring the heel of my palm square into his nose. It spread like Smucker's boysenberry jam. I helped him into a back dive, and he went reeling into the galaxy. The crown of his head caught the rear bumper, and he crumpled to the ground and lay still. If I thought Lurch was out of the fight, I was in for a surprise. I heard a grunt and twisted back just in time to take a roundhouse kick from him in the gut. Twisting avoided a blow to the ribs and a debilitating fracture, but as I folded over his shin and flopped to the ground, it was hard to gauge the immediate benefit. Lurch jumped forward and began aiming further kicks at my head. I brought my arms up to protect my skull and tried to roll out of range. His partner's prone body stopped my progress. Lurch skipped in for the kill. He fainted at my stomach, then aimed the toe of his wingtip straight at my throat. I barely managed to block it with my hands, but it stung like hell, and I knew his next kick would find its mark. Except there wasn't one. I heard a sickening thud, and Lurch collapsed to the ground like a rope ladder. A split second later, one of the 25-pound plates from my bench press came clattering down beside him. It rolled on its edge for a foot or so, imprinting a trail of red blood behind it, and then it went into a flat spin like a quarter tossed on a bar. I scrambled to a sitting position. My heart slammed kettle drum beats. I looked at the plate. I looked at Lurch. And I looked at the deserted street in front of my trailer. "What the fuck?" I said in summary.
"Up here."
Winnie stood on the roof of my trailer, arms akimbo, staring down at me. "What are you doing up there?"
"That's kind of a stupid question, isn't it? You just saw what I was doing up here."
I eased to my feet, holding my bruised stomach muscles with one hand, while I tried to detach the taser wire with the other. I meant, why did you go up there in the first place? I told you to wait in the trailer.
How did I know you weren't working for them, that you hadn't gone to call them?
She had a point. I was too busy doubting her story to think about how it looked from her perspective.
Okay, I said finally. Then the plate from the bench press was intended for you. I brought two of them, since I know you have a hard head.
Thank you for that. But if you had two, why didn't you use one of them a little sooner?
Let me answer that question with another. Why, after convincing them you were a neighbor, did you walk right up and let them know you were onto their game? I thought you had something better in mind.
Oh. Winnie dropped to her haunches, turned, and lowered herself over the side of the trailer. She hung from the edge of the roof for a moment and then let herself fall to the ground. Her landing was a bit wobbly, but no one observing her would guess that she was a quadriplegic. She went past me to squat by the short guy. She peeled back an eyelid to check his pupil, then pressed hard on one of his nail beds. She did the same for Lurch.
Dead, she concluded. Both of them.
Terrific.
Far from it. I needed, correction, we needed, to question them.
She came up to stand beside me.
Now we need to get rid of the bodies.
You have been listening to No Hard Feelings, a finalist for the Forward Reviews Book of the Year Award. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.